The Share Pickers Weekend Podcast with Justin, Paddy, Peter and Steve. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the Weekend Podcast. Back to normal. Pete's here, Steve's here and Paddy's absent, as normal. That's the way it normally is, isn't it? So welcome along, Pad. Thanks for not joining, as normal.
Again.
What is he doing? Yeah. Why is it Saturday morning so busy? What's going on?
You should re-record the intro and say Justin, Steve, Pete, not Paddy.
Yeah, I think that's more appropriate. Let's be honest.
Yeah,
we didn't get any. Sent Steve a text yesterday, and on the WhatsApp group, response. And I woke up this morning and saw Sky News earthquake South Wales.
I thought,
my word. And Steve didn't respond. Steve, are you there? Steve? Yep. Steve? And then he's joined Skype. It's fine. I think what that earthquake, it's a tremor in South Wales. And I thought what that probably was Steve's smart door closing. What the heck was that?
Where is South Wales? Was there an earthquake?
I'm looking now. It says it's on Sky. It says a small earthquake has been recorded in South Wales about 8 miles north of the Rhondda Valley just before midnight. The tremor was of 3.8 magnitude. And occurred at depths of 2 kilometres.
They probably opened the coal mines again, that's what it is.
Yeah, that's Google's Android earthquake alert system said the tremor was 4.2, so there's a bit of discrepancy over the European Mediterranean Seismological Centre and Google's Android earthquake system. So I don't know who we believe there, guys. You know, who's more accurate, Google or the guys that actually specialise in earthquakes? I don't know. Most people rely on Google, are they? So, residents in Abergavenny, Crickhowell, Llangannada, Llanfoist.
Oh, Llanfoist. Oh. Llanfoist. Do you fancy going to Llanfoist, love?
Many saying that furniture and windows shook. That's it.
Uh-oh.
You imagine if you'd taken a girl home or in an apartment for the first time ever. You got to the stage where you got to the bedroom department. Not in a shop, I mean in your house. Just right at that moment, you start, making love. And all of a sudden, the earth moves. Wow! She'd have been impressed, wouldn't she? Did you feel that? That was phenomenal. Right at the pinnacle, of the orgasmatron there. The earth, the table, everything started shaking. Whoa! Yeah. Steve, you missed that opportunity there, Steve.
I did, didn't I? Well, next time.
I mean, good.
Do you have a whole bedroom department in your house, do you?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Fantastic. Give it to them. Got good in the bedroom department. Yes. Well, you sell a lot of beds. Yes. Yeah. I sell lots of beds, yes. I'm very good in the bedroom department. Yes. I was just thinking, actually, this week, right? How would you make, if you had to, how would you make people eat more fruit and veg?
Okay.
And I thought, a good way of doing that, isn't it?
Right.
They're saying there's a shortage.
Oh, okay.
And if he's all kick, but it's like the old COVID days when people could get toilet rolls, people run out and just bought, 3 months worth. So people now, I bet people now are buying more fruit and veg than they normally did. Because that's the human nature, isn't it? If you can't have something, you want it. But something scarce, you want it. And in fact, it's the same kind of thing with, I don't know if you saw these, are you aware of these Prime drinks? KSI and Logan Paul. It's 6 months back, probably. Megan and Monty and Fred got into this. They used to go to Asda at 5 in the morning. They used to make me go up there as well because they'd only allow you to buy these Prime drinks by these YouTubers. Right. And you were only allowed 5 drinks per purchase. So Fred used to go in, Monty used to go in, I used to go in, and then we used to call every morning at Asda and stuff and get them. We had a garage full of them. In the end, we had so much, Megan started selling them on FaceBay. And we were selling them for like 5-6 quid a bottle. When they were like less than a quid a bottle or something. I think they were a quid a bottle or something. Yeah. But it was mad. Because it was sort of hyped up and limited, the scarcity, supply and demand, people just went mad for them. And even when Megan went to New York, recently, she bought loads back, different flavours they don't have over here. And she sold a sort of load. People go nuts about this. We see now people in Asda open up, sort of kids running in there and trying to buy them. It's like the Cabbage Patch dolls. Remember those? Back in the really ugly dolls, weren't they? And then the parents in America and news news channels film them fighting over these ugly dolls. And you think, are you mad or what? Yeah. It's all about scarcity, isn't it?
Yeah, and also the government reinforcing that message by going, just eat turnips. And I was like, what? I don't want to eat turnips. Right, let's go and buy greens.
We're going to run out of greens.
Oh, what's her name? What's the minister's name?
Well, did someone say that? Therese Scoff Coffey,
yes.
Is it?
She yes,
said,
that was it.
Just eat turnips.
she said that was the government advice. Like, don't worry, we got loads of turnips.
Yeah, there's a reason for that. No one bloody likes them.
Exactly.
But no, I want tomatoes. The government is probably create a whole storm on Twitter, that is. I want a tomato! Why can't I get a tomato?
No.
Right, bloody hell. No, it'd be pretty arguing off. I can take as many packs as I want. And that's the way you get people to eat healthy. Just say,
there's
very lack of fruit. And it's going to last till May. I bet there are people now, you know, sitting around tables, families, saying, you eat your veg. Next door, I haven't got any, because I've got loads. I've got a garage load of veg now. Eat it.
Are you going to take this approach to stocks and shares? What I need to do is tell everybody nobody could buy the shares in my portfolio.
Yeah.
You know, they're running out. There's none left. And then that will see loads
oddly,
of people want to buy them.
Yeah, but oddly, you know, on this kind of level here, it is the reason why share prices go up is supply and demand.
Yes.
Simple as that.
Supply and demand. Yeah.
Simple as that. And when it's a big, you know, if it's a big buyer in the market, like an institution, this, you know, especially if it's a small company, and there's lack of stock around, the share price starts to move. If it's a big seller, it starts to drop. Simple as that. You know, if too much stock out there, and the share price goes down. It's all about supply. And that's, in fact, I've talked about this before, but that's why you should pay attention to trends and share price and moving averages, because that's what they are. They're basically measuring whether there's net supply or net demand. And then you can make sure you're buying into a company fundamentally that's good, but also there's net buyers, net demand for the shares. You know, so that's a very good thing. By the way, boys, are you looking forward to the big sporting event of the weekend? Hey?
Yes. Yes.
Who do you think will win?
It's going to be something. What? You're not going to be talking about Wales and England. You're going to be talking about some
Jake Paul, Tommy Fury. Yeah.
There we go. Yeah. Who were they?
Tommy Fury, of course, is Tyson Fury's brother. Tyson Fury's a very good boxer. Tommy Fury, he's a bit more of a model. He was on Love Island, you know? But he has had about sort of 8 fights and he's won them, but not good. And Jake Paul is a YouTuber and he's been into boxing. He's not too bad. Everyone said, no, he's just a YouTuber. I wouldn't be surprised. And Tyson Fury says it's happening in Saudi Arabia on Sunday night. It's pay-per-view, I think, BT Sport, for £20. But Jake Paul and Logan Paul, they're massive YouTubers. They're a huge follower. They're multi-million. They've done so well. They're going into boxing as well. And, millions of people, love them and follow them. But they're really good at winding people up. And, they've gone into the boxing world. And many people say, you're not a boxer, you're a YouTuber. But to be fair, they work hard. And Jake Paul's only fought some MMA stars, so not really boxers. But he's won all his fights. But Tyson Fury has said to Tommy Fury, you better stay in Saudi Arabia. If you lose that fight, you've got to stay in Saudi Arabia. And Tommy Fury says, you're just a YouTuber. I'm from a boxing family. Yeah, but Tommy, you're not as good as Tyson. And you haven't fought anyone, really. So it'd be very embarrassing for Tommy Fury if he loses, because he's been calling this guy a YouTuber all the time. But Jake Paul is not bad. He's fit. He looks strong. He's bigger than Tommy Fury. So, yeah, it got interesting. But I was hoping that, the as far as rugby is concerned, I was hoping that the Wales team would just carry on striking for this season.
Yeah.
I thought, you're not going to get a win. It's got to the stage where, honestly, I'm thinking, who can Wales beat? The Six Nations? They can't seem to beat anyone. And I think England are a bit the same, isn't they?
Well, England, a bit patchy, aren't they? So, we'll see. I think it'll be a good game.
It's a match of the runs, it's a match of the runts, isn't it, really?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So, what time is it?
Unfortunately. 4:45 Saturday.
Oh, we're going for a bottomless brunch.
Well,
at 4:45.
No, earlier on, I think. So I don't know what time we're about. I want to see that, but there we are. Okay. Right, lads. What's your thought? Anything good on investment wise? Look at the stock market. What's happening? What's going on there?
It's only this. I'm selling everything.
Yeah, yeah. But it's only this week, right? I sort of got back to normal a little bit. From doing literally, we've come to a point where we are submitting our probate application for inheritance tax purposes. It's taken about 40 hours of work. That's how long it's taken, and mind-numbing work. And literally, like I said, you know, one of the things was going through 7 years of bank statements from mother and father, highlighting them, putting them into a spreadsheet, all that kind of stuff. Then I don't know how people, I've become quite proficient at the old spreadsheet, right? And I don't know how people would deal with it if you weren't au fait with spreadsheets, because you've got to do, you know, assets, liabilities, you know, net assets, all that stuff, and this is pulled from many different sources, from bank accounts, from property, everything, you know, and so you've got to weigh it up, and then there's certain thresholds, and without a spreadsheet knowledge, I wouldn't be able to do that, and I don't see how people do it. And these probate lawyers, if you get them to do it, they charge £275 pounds an hour.
Yeah, wow.
That's not a bad hourly wage, is it? Hourly rate. That's good. What's the living wage at the moment? £10 an hour?
Could they do it quicker than you, though? That's the thing.
No. They won't, will they? It's all about billing hours, isn't it? With solicitors, and that. You know, hours billed, that's all they do. The more hours billed, the better they are. The more chance of partnership, you know, getting a partner. But that's phenomenal, isn't it? £275 an hour. That is good work. You know, and obviously, they can afford to just work an hour a day, can they? Pretty much. And that's it, right? Put the feet up. So, anyway, I have no idea if it will do that, but we finally got to that. And we have a meeting next week now to go through all the forms to fill out. But it's I'm back to normal, you know, so I'm back on into it. And I've started, first time for like 3 weeks, I'm exercising. Are you guys exercising regularly?
Yeah. Always do.
We do it.
Yes. Me? Steve, go.
I was going to say, I've run a marathon this week.
Nice.
Yeah.
Which one, Steve?
Well, breaking up over.
Yeah.
Five runs, probably.
Yeah.
Oh, you've not run a marathon. You in distance wise, the equivalent of a marathon. Okay.
I'm happy with that. Yeah.
That's good. So, how many do you do? How many miles do you do a day?
7.
Do you? That's good. So, I can't run anymore. My knee doesn't let me run anymore. It's like, it's, you know, just it argues with me. I don't want to go for a run. I don't want to go for a run. No, but it hurts. It's got the stage where you are. Do you know what? I'm not joking, right? I've done no exercise, and having time spent, you know, sort of dealing with my parents passing away and all that stuff, my brother's health is dreadful at the moment. He needs a new hip. You'd feel yourself going downhill. And almost spending time closer to death and stuff, you almost feel like sometimes, oh, I'm not long away from passing away. But then because you've been, you know, out of the routine of keeping healthy and you're eating crap because you're in hospitals and all that stuff, or you're travelling up and down and you're just eating on the go all the time, you genuinely, your mind goes down, your body goes, you feel like worse, older and more decrepit, you know. But this week I've started exercising again and I feel a lot better already, you know, so it's nice to get back into the routine. But it's amazing what the mind can play tricks on you, just spending time around, you know, people who are deteriorating and older people and all that stuff. This is not good. Because you see, it's a one-way ticket to that sort of way. It's going that way anyway, you know. So, but it's amazing what exercise can do for you, just mentally. And I think anyone who has any issues, rather than go to the doctor, maybe get pills or uppers or whatever. It's always, I think, because I've read lots on this about the you know, serotonin levels and all that are increased with exercise, which is the happy drug in your body. And so, rather than giving someone fake sort of, you know, uppers, all doctors should prescribe exercise. First and foremost.
High on your own supply, as they call it.
Yes, high on your own supply. That's very good there, Steve. But that's what they should do, shouldn't they? Right, if someone comes in and says, I've been depressed. First thing they should ask is, first of all, what are you putting into your body? You know, is it good stuff? Is it good fuel for your body? And secondly, you know, are you exercising? Are you stimulating your body? Because we need to stimulate it. And then let's take it from there. You know, if you do a month of exercise, a month of healthy eating, come back and see me. If there's no improvement, we'll just drug you up to the hilt. So you're walking like a zombie. But I mean, you know, so it's nice to get back into sort of a stable routine, which is this week. This is how I've been doing. By the way, I just read the story, right? Eurovision 2023, government pledges £10 million towards Liverpool Song Contest. And I thought, are you kidding me? It's the government arguing with people who are paying all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
And they're giving this camp song contest £10 million just like that. Just see some camp rubbish singers dancing on the stage. Are you kidding? I don't know how that works out in pay-wise, but having spent time, you know, a lot of time in the last few weeks in hospitals or around nurses, they deserve it. It's a hard job. And you know what? I'm not just saying this, but we have problems with, you know, getting into hospital, waiting, all that stuff, and waiting times. But once you're in there, some of the nurses are fantastic, really are amazing. And And I'm just thinking, no, that, you know, I could not do that job. I would not want to do that job. So those people need a bit of pay. But also, the thing is this, and the nurse said to me this, right? She was a couple of them are agency nurses, others not. And so I said, so what's the difference then? She said, oh, well, I'd get £25, you know? I thought, £25 what? And she said, an hour. I said, right. And she said, well, your agency, yeah, yeah. So what do the normal staff get? And she said, well, it can be £9 to £15.
Yeah.
And she said, so they have to pay, she said, and the thing is, you have to pay us anyway, agency staff,
yep.
And they have to pay the agency fee on top.
Yeah.
So it makes no bones. If you just put normal staff on that wage, the bill of NHS wouldn't get any bigger. You know, they just say, right, listen, you can't be no more agency staff now. We're going to pay people £20 an hour, all nurses.
Yep.
And that would solve it. So the bill's not going to go up. So it's a bit of fakery there, isn't it? So just, but, you know, let's give £10 million to camp dancers and singers in Liverpool. That's good. Anyway, investor boys, anything happening in the stock market?
Well, Polarian is the one that's really, you know, being beaten up at the moment, isn't it? That's a hard hold, and I haven't sold anything yet. But no, I don't think I will, because it's just... It's a long, long road, but the investor presentation clearly didn't go down well this week.
Yeah, you said that. I didn't see it. Someone emailed me and said they focused, you know, listen.
They mentioned funding.
Yeah, you mentioned funding.
That's the problem.
And of course, if you say in an RNS, and I'll get the RNS up here, Polarian at the moment, as you know, I want to talk about my spreadsheet in a bit because I'm so proud of what I've done with the spreadsheet, and it literally breaks companies down now. I've got I don't know if you joined the webinar, boys, on Wednesday.
But I didn't actually, no.
All right, so I break all companies down, right, into metrics. So, for example, let me open one up. But I'll talk about Polarian in response to this, but let me just open this up. We'll get back to it. So... You punch in, you know, the final results for a company, and literally that's a bit of a ball ache, but you can automate it a little bit. But literally everything from their financial statements, from, you know, the profit, revenue, gross profit, all that stuff, balance sheet stuff, you know, cash flow statements, all that. And then it breaks it down into four sections, okay? You get the company, but breaks it down into growth, value, health, efficiency, and momentum. Within each of those categories, there's about five metrics. So within growth, for example, there's revenue, operating growth, net growth, price to earnings growth, operating cash flow, free cash flow growth. So, and value as well is about five metrics, right? And next to all these, then you put a score next to them, right? So the score between 0 and 2. And then basically at the end, there's a drop down menu next to each one of these. At the end of all these, at the end of all the scoring, you get a score, of course. And then I've got a spreadsheet then that collates all that, all different companies. And it compares all the scores, so you can see which companies score highly on growth, value, health, efficiency, and momentum. You know, so straight away you know what companies. Looking at the board, you can see which companies score highly across all the groups. So they're growing, they're good value, you know, they're healthy, they're efficient, and they've got momentum. So it's a very good thing. But on all sides, different sectors. So I break these down as well. So I collect all of them together in one sector, but also. They are broken down into sort of size-wise or what they are. So big caps, mid caps, small caps, micro caps, and HHP. And HHP is...
Hype, hope, potential.
Well, yes, I say hope, hype, potential. You say hype,
that's
potential.
It.
Hope, hype,
well,
potential.
Well, whatever.
Now,
yeah.
And now, companies that fall into that category... Well, not crap. I don't want to look for companies that are crap. I want to, if I'm going to, because I've got, you know, room in my portfolio for these kind of companies. I mean, you know, it's going to take about 10, 15, 20% of my portfolio, these companies. But, and I was very much hoping to get Polarian back on the register there, because I do think it's one of the biggest companies as far as hope pipe potential is concerned.
Yeah.
Let's be honest, their medical devices technology is, well, it's groundbreaking, it's pioneering. It's out there. No one else has that. You know, they are. So they, and they've got the Hatch Waxman. Hi, I'm Hatch Waxman. But it's got that. They've got that exclusivity of the market as well. And it's, like I say, a huge, as they say, unmet medical need. So there's the hope is that they'll become the big player in the industry. There's hype there as well. At the moment, the hype has been deflated, and there's potential, right? So that's hope. I've been there. Now, companies that fall into this section are largely pre-revenue or loss-making. So the most important thing is this, and I say this every week in the webinar, I highlight, we look at a whole bunch of potential stock on the webinar. So I try and find a company from every one of those sectors to look at on the webinar, and then we score them as well. This is the Share Pickers Investment Club. Now, the whole pipe potential, and I say this every time, I say, make sure the company has funded. You know, they are funded well. Yeah. Because if they're not funded well, that becomes the story. These are story stocks. But if they don't have funding, that becomes the story, and the hope pipe potential is lost. There's no story there. And so when they did a company update on the 13th of February, and they said the company finished 2022 with approximately 16 million in cash, which is expected to fund the company until May 2024. I thought, okay, well, hang on a second, you're in February, so that's February 2023, that's 12 months, March, April, May, that's 15 months of cash. Why are you talking about cash? Why are you making that the story? People are going to latch onto that. The story is the whole pipe potential. All of a sudden, you've lost that. You know, that's it. That's now funding has become the story. And so people are now hooking onto that and so worrying about funding. But we are now in a bear market. In 12 months' time, right, we could be in a very liquid, buoyant bull market where raising money is not a problem. At the moment, it is. You know, some people, so they don't need to raise money now. So don't fret everyone. They don't need to raise money now. But the worry is they're going to raise money now. And they, my word. So that's, you know, basically it's pierced the bubble. You know, it's popped the bubble, the whole pipe potential bubble, and all is sitting there is a deflated sort of thing. So I don't, what they need, I think, to come out with is some commercial contracts that'll reinflate that bubble.
Well, I think the, and then obviously they went into that in the presentation and they're talking about the funding, and it sounded like it, perhaps it was before May 24 they'll need funding or whatever. But, I don't know why they get, I don't know who advises them. They've always had quite an interesting approach to PR, haven't they? Because they never say much, and you don't really know what's going on. And then there's the whole FEA thing, and we've all been through that turmoil and all that. And I've just sat and held. It's just disappointing for them to be focusing on that now. We said, no, let's focus on the bigger picture now and the sales and the driving forward of that. And then I think, like we said the other week, there's partnership opportunities, surely. There's all sorts of other ways of funding. You know, I just think, I don't know. I'm just hopefully, I'm hoping I'm not wishful thinking. I'm just hoping that something in the next 6 months, you know, some real good green shoots will appear. Why are we even talking about funding? So, it's disappointing because you see the hit. Because I've always been up, because we bought very low, didn't we? Bought really at a really good price. I've always been up, even after the infamous Brown Wednesday. And now I'm actually down. So it's like, oof, that's a lot of profit that's disappeared in the last 18 months, whatever. But, I'm just sitting and holding and praying a little bit. But they're a big company. They're not some tin pot company. They've got some technology. They've got flipping FDA approval. And what I'm trying to console myself with is that this week's drop is just panicking private investors, isn't it? Is private investors go, I've had enough, and they're off. And I'm hoping it's not institutional investors that are like making big decisions. It's lots of private investors that are panicking and getting out and thinking they can make better money sooner elsewhere. And fair play, good luck to them. But I don't know where else I'd put the money, so I'm sat and holding. And let's see.
Well, they say.
But I don't know. I'm open to criticism. Am I being stupid doing that? I don't know.
Well, no. Listen, if you are investing in micro cap, hope high potential stocks, they're going to be very volatile. Okay, and you have to have. So either you take a quick profit and you get out, or if you don't and you still believe in the story, then you just ignore the share price and hold because you understand the potential upside is massive. And that's why you hold microcaps, because you can do multiples of your initial investment. But that's not a smooth appreciation in share price. Like I said, even if you look at big companies, like, you know, the Metas, the Facebooks of this world, they've dropped, they've bounced recently, but they've dropped like 70-80% in the last 12 months. And they are big companies, you know, £1 billion companies, cash flow positive companies, even Google and all that stuff, Alphabet, Amazon, they've all dropped massively. So if you look at the volatility of those alone, so if you're prepared to, take a punt on this, but that's what I'm saying, at the moment, it's a concept, but it's a very, as far as Plarium is concerned, in my mind, when I look at hope high potential companies, I just go for punts and oil and gas stuff like that. Because that is odds against bet. You're looking at a company here with very good tech. You know, they've got a leading advantage in the market here. They've got many good relationships with many institutions, and they do say the company anticipates converting 9 research sites to FDA-approved configuration and clinical use, selling 75 to 100 XenoView gas blend cylinders and 15 to 20 polarized systems over the next 24 months. So they've already got, research papers out there. There's a lot of good stuff, being talked about them from people like Professor Gleeson and all that from Oxford University. So it's not as if this is, in your head. We're not deluded about saying this is, groundbreaking tech. It is. It is groundbreaking tech.
Yeah.
So it is.
Well, exactly.
It's an educated punt, very educated punt. But you're going to have to accept the volatility here. It'd be nice if they literally, when raise money at the top of the market. But the thing is, right? You can see Rampy Company. This is not a Rampy company. Rampy companies understand how the market works. They understand that completely. So what they do is they'll put out, a good bit of news maybe, and I'm not talking about playing other companies, that maybe has got a bit more hot air in it than reality, and the share price will rise, and they'll raise money. But that's a clever way of playing the market. Polaria not doing that. They're doing what's correct. And they're telling people what the cash is, what the business needs, and they're being quite transparent there,
If there's any criticism, they're too honest, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. They're being quite transparent, and unfortunately, investors don't like to hear the stark reality of the situation. They said they've got 60 million cash, it'll last until May, and they do say, based on current cash balance, the company will need additional cash resources to achieve the 24-month commercial targets. Now, that doesn't mean they have to raise tomorrow. In any financial document, basically, good guidance is that you have to say, as a going concern, whether the company will, is a good going concern, it has a cash balance in the next 12 months. They're going beyond that. They're saying, we got enough for more than that. We're just telling you exactly what we have. So they are being transparent. But unfortunately, market and investors in microcaps like to hear all good stuff, They want the CEO and stuff to pump it up a bit and, give it a bit of fluff. And there are plenty of CEOs do that, and they come unstuck in the end because, when reality hits and they're not getting commercial traction, I've seen people hold on to companies. There are plenty of hope-hype potential stocks on AIM that have done, well, but crashed because they haven't achieved the reality of what the CEO is saying. Whereas I think it's the other way around with Polaria. I think the CEO has been hugely honest and the company's been very honest and people don't like the stark reality. This is the business. Microcaps is, microcap companies, they're pre-revenue. It's not easy. You have to raise money. That's the way it is.
The one thing on the share price movement, I'd say there's just seen some support on on Friday because it did drop another 10% on Friday, but then recovered, I think, end of the day, only 4 or 5% down. So, I don't know, again, clutching at straws, but hopefully, there is some support there and some people seeing the longer term picture. And I don't know. I guess I'm just sitting and holding and hoping, but the other question is...
You're hoping, so that's part of the deal. Hoping and... you've got to have... for a while, one of my portfolios, I've rebalanced it, but I've still got room for that hope-high potential. But I said, those stocks, are not just, I hope they discover oil or gas here. That's not what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to discover companies that have massive potential... based on educated research, and I believe Polaria is one of those, and no doubt if they get a couple of if they convert some, well, they will do. Why wouldn't some of these institutions now who've been using them as research models, are paying for them, paying for them to be used as research, now transfer to convert these into clinical sort of models, because these centres of excellence are going to want to use the best tech, because then they are the first to get the research out on all the stuff, and that it reinforces their standing in the sector, doesn't it? If you were getting groundbreaking research out and you were publishing it using brand new tech, that literally says we are market leaders here. We've got the best tech and we're putting out the best research. And to do that, they need Polaria's technology. And so I think why wouldn't they convert those FDA licenses to commercial licenses? So I think they need a couple of those. I think if anything they should have. They should get the good news, next time, temper it with a bit of good news and a bit of reality. So,
And then the only other question I had on them is, now they're at a 60 million odd market cap. It's then how to try and like look forward at like what a fair valuation is going to be. I know that's always difficult because again, it's dependent on sales and depending on how successful they can be in that area. But I don't know what is a sensible kind of valuation.
So I was looking at them.
And what PE would they be kind of, trading on? I don't know.
Yeah, but at the moment, you would use a sort of. That's what I'm saying. It's all at the moment. This market is about rewarding companies right now that are generating cash right now. That's this market. That's the bear market. It always happens in bear markets. All the future sort of revenue generating potential stocks are hammered in these kind of markets. That's microcaps, because especially now, interest rates have gone up. So, that impacts future cash flows. So that's why, companies that will be earning cash flow in the future and are loss making now, they hit from both ends. First of all, the cost of capital has gone up, so raising money is harder, and then future profits can be hit as well if interest rates continue. So that's where they hit massively. So, but I'm trying to find the broken note I had from, but the growth there was phenomenal. It was literally you're talking sort of ramping up very quickly from sort of small digit in millions to sort of triple digit, 100 millions, within 3-5 years.
But broken oats have to be taken with a pinch of salt, don't they? So,
they're forecasts, like weather forecasts, The further you go out, the less accurate they are. But if you've got it depends on the company is, of course. If you've got a company that's consistently done what it's done for the last 20 years and generating profits, then forecasting becomes easier. If you're talking about a new tech that's breaking into new markets, then you're never going to be accurate on, how the runway is going to happen, because you know what's going to happen. But, you can, surmise by the market, the market potential and the fact that a leading dominator in there. Where's that? There's a broken note, but I don't know. I can't find it. But I genuinely have got a space in my portfolio for Plarium. And I think once you get some good news and that downtrend stops and we start to see a bit of an uptrend, I'll probably get back into them. Because I do like the tech.
Well, you'll do very well by that, getting a very low price on it as well.
At the moment. Low price.
Steve, are you still in there? Steve, have you sold any?
No. Well, I sold some, just to move cash around, about a year or two ago when after the drop.
Cash around, he likes to move a bit of cash around, Steve. Let's just in front of his computer. Let's move a bit of cash around here. I'd put 10 million over to the Bahamas there. Let's put some into Jersey. That's right.
It didn't do me well, but I did it.
No.
Spent 3 hours on his computer just moving cash around.
Yeah, exactly. But that's the thing, right? That's what I think. Yes, I could take some money out now at a loss just to reduce my exposure. Yes, of course, that makes sense. But where do I put it? There's no guarantee that. I mean, who is making money on AIM at the moment? I don't know. Where are the good? What are the money? What are the?
I am.
On AIM, you're doing some bigger stocks, aren't you?
There's a couple in AIM. Yeah. I'm not making a huge amount because I this is what I feel about the market. I feel the market will be, the S&P, for example, 500. The part of my reasoning is why I'm going to do a fund as well, because I see over the next 2-3 years, I see for example, I'm going to buy the S&P 500 fund, right? And I see that over the next 5 years going sideways up. So rather than holding money in a bank, I think you'll get, in fact, these days, you can get sort of interest on, but locked in accounts, they are 5%. So I'm going to use a fund pretty much as, a bank account, but hopefully it'll appreciate. So it's not just sitting there doing nothing, So, but I will build that fund over this. But I would say, right now, it's up to you what you do. All I'm giving you is optionality. You can, sit and put the money in a fund for a while if you think the fund, and the fund will be, for example, if you look at that, Life Strategy Vanguard fund, that'll be less volatile than Plarium share price. But then you probably take it out, Plarium, put it in that, and then Plarium will bounce. And so you think, bounce by 20%. You bloody hell. I've lost, so it depends, isn't it? Like I said, if you're still in profit here, and I say you got in at the lower time, but if you want less volatility, and that's all it's about, really, if you want less volatility and more predictive action on your cash or your holding, then either go to cash or put in a fund, maybe, well-diversified fund. But then you would miss out on the upside if all of a sudden they release good news on Monday or next week.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? And that's the thing. No, I'm not in profit now, Pellerin. And, you know, looking at the chart, you could go, yep, the 50-day move below the 200-day a couple of weeks ago.
It's a massive... I looked at this chart, like, I think it was, you know, last week, and I said... Because someone did say to me they've just bought the dip, and I said, be careful with buying the dip. It's, you know, in the bear market, you can't do it. You can do it in a bull market. That's why, literally, I'm averaging up on stocks, not down. In a bear market, you can keep averaging down. You can basically see your portfolio value, you know, erode, essentially. What I would say is that Pellerin generally now, it's, the RSI is literally just below 30. And whenever it's done that before, it's tend to have bounced. So a couple of times, looking back, it bounced back in January when it happened there, bounced up, it went from 39 to 50. Going back to like 29th September, it bounced there from 41 to sort of 55. And in fact, back in even July last year, it dipped to 39 pence, and it went up to 66 pence. So you could see a major bounce here, because they don't need cash urgently, and unless they're in the market trying to raise money, then it will bounce. You know, that's the worry.
And the fundamental thing is that you know, it will fly on news if it has some sort of sales definitely. Commercial agreement with some, you know, someone somewhere goes, yeah, we'll buy 10 of these machines, we'll buy 20, whatever, it will go, hold on, that's starting to move. Then
you say that, Pete.
back into it. No, it will though, won't it? Because that's the big question over, you know, there's one question over funding, one question over the commercials and the sales. If they start to get sales in, they report some sales news, and you don't know when that's going to happen. That might be in a month's time, 3 months' time, 6 months' time, but... It will push back up because people go, okay, they're starting to move. There's something happening. And people, the FOMO will kick in with people.
No, it can turn on a dime. I mean, largely, if the volume is quite small, and looking at it, it's not a massive volume, and if the volume is quite small and, you know, all the sellers have sold, then, you know, it doesn't take a lot. If you get then some net demand of those shares, it can move up quite quickly. So, but I wouldn't be getting in here unless there's a marked change in that trend and they announce something. That's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for you know, proof of commercial concept. We got proof of concept. We've had that. We've seen that with all the institutions out there, you know, using research centres, using them, you know, over 100 peer-reviewed papers. We know that the commercial concept is sound. So the actual concept is sound. The commercial concept now, so I need that, and then I need a trend to start up. But, I know, I stand behind a video I did a while back, and this company could be huge. Could be massive.
Yeah.
I mean, it probably could be taken out as well, because it's an addition.
Well, exactly. And compared to probably any other company I've invested on in AIM, it's a real... to me, it seems really different in that it has actual, real potential to become a much bigger company than it is now. So I don't know, but only time will tell. And it's brutal to hold on to it, but let's see.
But I would try, and it's changed my thought. This bear market, I say, you learn, and you know, some people have sort of you change your strategy a lot. Now, I change because you have to. It's not a change. I think it is evolving. You know, I'm still investing in companies. And a long time back, I did say about a diversified portfolio, I got greedy, went all microcap, and I ignored my previous sort of advice. This time, I'm not going to ignore it. I've got a really regimented sort of portfolio strategy of what I want to achieve. And this is, you know, different companies with different risk profiles to achieve a decent return. And I would implore people not to average down in bear markets. It's not good. You can literally see your portfolio erode. And I can't hammer this home enough, but, you know, I see people on the webinar a lot do this, and then they say they're buying the dip. And I said, no, be careful. You know, it can punish you. It's fine when the general market's going up, because dips are that. But when the market's going down, they aren't dips. They are downtrends, and that's a different thing. And so you have to be aware of that. And to get into your head, like, so for example, if you bought 100 companies, let's say 1% of your portfolio each, right? And then you only decided to... No, let's make it simpler. Let's say you bought 50 companies, right? 1% of your portfolio each. So you got 50% in cash, and you got 50 companies, 1% each, right? And you ignored the companies that went in a downtrend. And you only then, invested more capital in the company started rising. You would see your portfolio transform because the loss makers aren't going to make a big deal to you anyway because they're just 1%, 2%. Most of them will not crash. Some of them may crash. Some of them may go sideways. Some of them just may be, you know, average performers. But you'll get, you know, out of those 50 companies, if you've done a bit of research and you've done basic level research, knowing they've got cash, they've got decent potential there, and, you know, they're starting to grow in some way, then they'll start to perform. And some may be unlikely massive outperformers. They may rise massively. Now, if you only allocate cash to those winners, that will transform your portfolio to mean that you're leveraged to winners.
Yeah.
Buying losers and averaging down means your portfolio is leveraged to losers. That will drag your portfolio volume down. So that said, that's the way I'm sort of planning. I'm not going 50 companies. I own 19 plus a fund at the moment, but I've got literally, how much more have I got? That's pretty much it. I mean, the maximum I'm gonna go for, if looking at this, I say maximum, I don't want to be going for more companies than that. And more than likely, if I see companies underperforming, then I'll probably get out of them. But I don't initially go now, 2-3% maximum initial buy-in. And then if they start moving up, like I've done it with a couple of companies, like there's, for example, Argentex, I averaged up on, that's now 9% holding. XP Factories is my biggest holder, 12%, because, you know, I still bought that 7 pence. That's starting a nice little uptrend. It's a bit volatile at all as yet. But things like, you know, I bought like House Builder, MJ Gleeson, and I'm now up to 4% in that. I started, I think, with 1%, but I'm now averaging up on that. And I'm in profit on that. So, and things like this, and again, what is it? Where else am I? So I'm basically averaging up on companies that are, you know, going up, and that way, you know, that value of that company is going up. The value of my portfolio is going up. So and then the companies that are not performing, I won't allocate any more cash to. It's pointless because, you know, even though fundamentally they may be very good, if they aren't, you know, technically in an uptrend, there's no point allocating more money to it. Why would you do that? So, you know, it's like. It's almost like if you go back to betting, you got, you know, you look at say, you keep an eye on say 5 horses over several races, and one horse keeps winning, you're going to put your money on the one horse keeps winning. You know, you don't want to say, well, that horse is very good, but it's not something wrong with it. It's not winning. You're not going to just keep saying, oh, I'm going to throw money at that horse that keeps losing because I believe in it. I believe in it. Yeah, he's not proving it, but I believe it. So just go where the winners are. You know, just keep.
But I'm not. Yeah, I'm not throwing more money on that horse. I'm just. Holding on to it and making sure it's fed and watered.
Yeah, you're waiting for it to come into form.
But yeah, okay, interesting.
Yeah, Stephen, what's happening? Anything? Anything good happening? Anything good on TV? Anything, you know, happening at all in life? You know, apart from moving cash around.
Right, yeah, you know,
moving cash around.
A lot of my week is taken up by the cash moving, you know.
He stretches his fingers like that, quits the fingers. Right, let's move some cash around here. Right, move £5 over there. £10, just move that in there. £15 moved to there. Right, that's it. That's all done for today. Cash moved around.
And then put it back where it was at the beginning.
Yeah, let's put that back, actually. And, but I was. How's work, boys? I know. I think this year, by the way, I think it'll be a bit volatile. I think we may have hit the bottom, but you know, it's been a bit of a bounce in stocks, in certain stocks. We may need to roll over a bit here because you know, most companies will outperform in this environment, and so I think we'll probably go sideways for a while, and then towards the end of the year, as you know. We see the people maybe, I think the job market will soften up a bit and people will start losing a bit of jobs and stuff like that. Then the central banks will ease off and I think we'll start to see a good rally. But so I think there's opportunity this year, but it's not going to be a full-on rally this year, I don't think. Maybe towards the end of the year. But again, it's a stock market. I mean, it's a market of stocks. Certain stocks will outperform because they're good businesses. But that's what we have to look for. And that's why I love my spreadsheet, you see. It breaks them down to every metric. You should, if you look at companies, right? There's only, you know, a couple of reasons why I've looked thought this. Why buy a company? What's the reason to buy a company? And I'm thinking, why would you invest in a company, Pete, Steve? Why would you invest? What's the reason? Why would you invest in a company?
Oh, to make money mainly.
Yeah, but how, yeah, but exactly. Yes, but how would it make money?
Because it's going to be a growing and successful business.
There we are, growing, yes. So literally, either a company has got to have growth, okay, or potential future growth. So there's a difference, isn't there? I mean, either it has growth, and I mean that by sort of top line, profit growth, all that stuff. So either it has actual real growth now, or you're looking at future growth, and that's hope by potential. And then you've got value, of course. If your company's undervalued, then you think, okay, if this company's, you know, turning over this amount of money, make this amount of profit, and it's literally below its book value, net asset value, you know, whatever, then that's undervalued, that its business is undervalued. So it's, you know, you're buying something cheaper than it's actually worth. So either they got growth and their profits are going to make them, you know, going to make them more valuable than they currently are, or currently they're undervalued based on all this. So there's growth, there's value, and I suppose also there's momentum, because if a company starts, you know, traders look at it, they don't care about the fundamentals of a company. If momentum on the chart is very good, they'll buy into it. So those things are covered in my spreadsheet. Not only that, there's two extra layers. So growth, value, I look at health, you know, do they have decent cash? Are they, lack of debt? I look at efficiency as well, which is to make sure, you know, if they're a good company, you know, what's their margins like? If they're, you know, decent margins there, the gross margin, operating margin, net margin, all that. So I look at all that, and all these have scores. And then you put them together. So I now got a list of scores. I'm not going to tell you what's top, but I'm going to tell you one thing. I do hold it. I go through about, you know, five, six companies. I look at a company every day. It's my plan now to analyze a company and punch in the numbers every day. I do more than that, probably. And so I do about over 10 companies a week I look at, and I put them in the spreadsheet. But I've only just started putting them in the score sheet. So I've now got 20 companies that I've looked at. Of course, before I even look at them, I sort of do a pre-sort of research on them and say where they look worth looking at. But there's a list now of 20 companies I've got ranked. And I tell you what, I hold the top two, which is very good.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're not going to tell us.
In the score, the total score of the top one is 98. And the maximum score. Let me just.
How big's the list? How many?
At the moment, it's got. I've analysed hundreds of companies, but I've only started filling in this comparable sheet in the last week or so. You know, so
okay.
I've now got 20 companies in there on the comparable sheet. But like I said, I won't put companies in there.
Yeah, but you own 19, so have you?
But I haven't even put those in yet. But I mean, you know, some of those are put in. But okay. I mean, many of the companies I won't even bother looking at. You can look at their financial statements straight away and think, no, it's a crap company. It's not doing very well. But the maximum score you can get is 108, okay? And the top company has got 98. The second company's got 84, and I own those. And in fact, the fourth company I own as well. So, so it's good to look at it. Also, they're colour-coded. It's very good. All the scores are colour-coded. The green is obviously good. It's three greens. So, you know, final score, interim score, total score.
Good.
It's very good. It's hard to be enthusiastic about a spreadsheet, but I think, guys, you should check out you go to the website, and the webinar's there from Wednesday, and I explain it. It's drop-down for anyone can download.
I will.
Any member of the club can download the spreadsheet, and they can use these drop-down scores, for the financial metrics, and then they can get an overall score. And it's based on, growth, value, health, efficiency, momentum. And,
I only like spreadsheets if they're colour coded. So
this does it all for you.
So yeah, really, good, yeah, good. Yeah.
You can go overboard with the colour coding sometimes. Mm-hmm. I find
You know, I tried to be a little bit you know, less than more. Don't go for brash, horrible, you know, blacked out colours. They are, you know, sort of pastel.
But are you using a gradient in your conditional formatting?
Yes.
Right, good, excellent.
Yeah, conditional formatting, some data validation.
Oh, I love
I meant the data validation, conditional formatting. Listen, this is getting into areas now where there are people out there really getting excited, and there are some people going, what the
heck? Oh, data validation is a key part of the drop down. Yeah, absolutely.
I don't even know what that is.
Exactly. See? Steve and Pete there. Oh, Steve, if you dive into the world of spreadsheets, honestly, fella. You'll while away hours of time. It's literally.
Oh no, I do. I do love a spreadsheet, but that went one step too far for me. I don't know really what you're talking about. Yeah.
Are you into the if error function as well?
That's yes, I do a bit of that.
I love an if error. Yeah. If error, that makes a spreadsheet look much neater. than having any.
Yeah, so if basically you've told me that before, but do you know what? I haven't inserted that, but I will.
Oh, you should do that.
Those are the final tidying up points, but I have very few. If I get any errors, I sort it. But so the affair, I just what? If you haven't entered, if you've got a formula there and it comes up with a hashtag div, doesn't it sometimes?
Yeah,
so
exactly. But that's sometimes. That. Yeah. Sometimes because the data isn't available or it's not valid or whatever. So, but it doesn't mean it's an error. So it. You can't fix it, so it just needs to be marked as a zero or whatever, and it just neatens up the spreadsheet.
Anyway, let's finish.
Can I just one question? Yeah, you talk about the rallying and all that, and I suppose the fear for me, and I guess a lot of private investors, is that you know you're sitting there with your portfolio, you might be down or barely in profit and whatever. And yes, there's talk of hopefully a rally and brighter days and all that. And the fear, obviously, is that your stocks don't rally. But yeah. I'm looking at my portfolio, XP Factory, people like Trufin, GTech, Polarian. I'm sitting and holding and hoping that those four probably are the ones that I would see as still having potential, still seeing something of a bounce as and when the market as a whole recovers. But am I being a fool? I don't know.
No, I don't think so. I mean, if you look at XP Factory, for example, you know, then what they did last year, I think, was phenomenal. I think for a company to, you know, get as many boom battle bars online in 1 year, 27 in a year, you know,
yeah,
they were still opening them towards the end, and they achieved 22 million in revenue, up from 7 million. This has gone through COVID now, and all this, all the stuff we've had, lockdown, strikes, all that. You know, they've done all that, and they've taken advantage pretty much of COVID. That shows you the mark of a management, in my mind. And you realise now, when they achieved that revenue up until you know 31st December last year, their busiest week was hit by strikes. Okay, and Richard did say on the podcast that was our busiest week. That's when the you know Christmas parties happened. And people started postponing. Some people cancelled, but people started postponing. So they still did 22 million revenue, but they were still opening sites. Right now, those sites are open. So if you have a full run at it this year, if they have a full run at the, you know up the, this year, they're going to hit you know over 30 million in revenue. What did they say the run rate was going to be? But of course they got you know. I just think that they've got it now. And Richard kept saying, last year was building the foundations for growth. And the foundations are pretty much in now. You know, they're all there. And all they need to do now is operate rather than open. Yep. Before they're opening and operating, and now they're basically all open, just operate. So, I think this is...
I sort of see it a bit, again, like a Polarian, where you kind of go, you know, all the companies on AIM or whatever, you know, these kind of companies I'm happy to hold, I think, I hope.
Yeah,
because I think they're a growing story. There's a lot of speed bumps with Polarian, but you know, I'm hoping both of those. So yeah, okay. No, that's good. And GTech, they reported, you know, they were positive update the other week, and then that was good. And Trufin's a bit of a random one, but
yeah, GTech's been a bit of a slow burner, but they've had a change of the CEO, haven't they? But do you know what? I always got the CEO. CEO was always emailed me whenever they did an RS. He always emailed me personally. Obviously, probably other people as well, but he always emailed me the news when I said, you know, thanks, Jonathan. Yeah, I've read that. It's very good. And but the email he didn't send me was him stepping down.
You're right, okay.
Or being, but so I think there's been a frustrated investor in there that's pushed the board to say, come on, let's get this going now. Because there's potential there. It's like the area they work in, lots of potential, not just the green hydrogen, but, you know, geolocation, geothermal location, all that, heat sources and all that. It's a huge area there. So there's lots of potential there. So hopefully that'll rally a bit. But I also see, honestly, Trufin, and I think that's a target a deal being massive. That's the thing. They've got the steady income from oxygen, but Zitargo, I think, is a real game changer. Like I said, again, it's a best in class tech, you know. And the fact that the banks like Lloyds and Sage have signed up to it just says everything, you know. That's the golden marks. That's the stamp of approval, isn't it? From the best, you know, one of the biggest banks in the country, and Sage as well. So yeah, they have something there. The jewel in the crown is Zitargo, and that has potential to do, you know, massive growth. So yeah, I like that. And like I said, sometimes you just got to hold, you know, these kind of companies if it's going as they say. So yeah, and they've rolled out again, so yeah, I believe in that. I think it's going to go well. What else did you mention there? You mentioned something else, XB.
GTech, Polarian, yeah, they're the four.
Polarian, yes.
They're my four. you know, I've refused to acknowledge Gfinity as a company anymore. But
oh,
that's
it's
a nightmare. That was a nightmare.
I know. Apparently, I've heard they're on the cusp of a deal.
Good. And I hope it.
No, they didn't.
10 bags from here.
No, that didn't happen. So,
oh, great.
But yeah. So that's, and John has gone. But like I say, even now, what's annoying is they've done a fundraiser with warrants, which is annoying. It was always a drag. But like the Marty cap here is when do you get the, what is it, less than 2 million?
Yeah.
Which is nuts, because they're, you know, if they get this Athlos platform going and all that stuff, I mean, just on sentiment alone, it's like that could double very quickly, you know. And again,
yeah, but it's still like doubling.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, talk about averaging down. Some people may average down, but be careful, you know, and to try and get your money back. Sometimes I just say, listen, if you've got a loser, cut it or ignore it. Don't double down on it, because you know.
Going back to spreadsheets, if this was a spreadsheet, I would hide this row in my portfolio.
Yeah, but also if you're only, if your initial allocation on risky stocks is quite low, then it's fine. You know, you've got to be prepared. With hope, high potential, you've got to be prepared for some companies to absolutely bomb. And you've got to build that into your risk profile and exposure profile, you know. So literally, if you're only exposing yourself to 1% or 2% or 3%, you know, initially, and it doesn't go to form, fine, it's not going to break the bank, you know, but then hopefully you'll have some that'll double, triple, and so doesn't matter, you know. But initially, that's why you should never go actually massively strong on microcap hope high potential stocks, because they can bomb, and if you get it wrong, it can bankrupt you. So, you know, so it's all about exposure, isn't it? And risk, whatever. Anyway, let's finish off now. So quickly, have you watched Gold? That's quite good on TV.
No, what's that?
Steve, have you seen that?
Gold, no.
Gold. Have you noticed this? No, heavily advertised with BBC.
Steve's more into cash rather than gold.
Yeah. So it's about the Brinks Matt gold robbery, you know?
A documentary
on that, and Kenneth Noy.
Yes,
you heard of Kenneth Noy? He went on the run. He stabbed a police officer. They were surveilling him. He was the guy actually breaking down, you know, melting down he didn't do the robbery, but he was the main man. Of course, you steal gold, you can't do anything with it, because it's all stamped and all that stuff, and people know where it is. So they had to sort of melt it down into a less high-quality gold, and then just try and, you know, first of all, you've got to set that off, then you've got to cash, then you've got to wash the cash. So he's in charge of that end of it. But he, you know, he stabbed it, it's real life, he stabbed an officer, you know, in his grounds who were surveilling him. And then a while back, he was on the run, and he's let go on that or something. And then
did M25 murder, wasn't
yes,
he?
And then he had a road rage incident where he got up and stabbed a guy in the chest. It's a really nasty piece of work, you know. And in fact, when the jury sent him down, he turned to the jury and he said, I hope you all get cancer.
Lovely guy.
It's a lovely guy. He's out now. He's out. Yeah, he's 75 years out. But it's amazing, because it was the biggest ever, 26 million back in the, I think it was it late 80s, early 90s? But it's worth watching. Gold documentary. It's very good. I quite liked it. And you just see how, you know, the money laundered. You realise a lot of that money was unrecovered. A lot of it went into, you know, businesses and property development in London, in Docklands and all that stuff. A lot of it did, you know, so it became legitimate. Yeah, but so it's very good work. It's on our BBC iPlayer Gold.
If you look at Kenneth Noy's Wikipedia page, you know, below the name, they have, you know, what their occupation is, it just says English criminal. that's an aspiration, isn't it? An English criminal.
I'm a bit fascinated by criminals. Are you? I mean, how they go. I mean, it's a point in the thing where they went to him, the gold robbers went to him and said, you know, you want to take on this? And his friend said, no, it's too much gold. We can't take it on, Kenneth. And they said to him, how come, you know, you can do this if we haven't heard of you? He said, listen, mate. He said, the good criminals don't get caught. And so, and in fact, he did get caught. But there is a criminal out there, right? Who's literally, I know, I've been scared to mention his name, but he's not been called. The tall one, I think he's called. The long man.
We're now Googling criminals. Yeah. What the hell? Right, should we wrap this up?
Yeah. So any David Hunt. Look at him, right? Okay. He's a guy, literally, the Guardian once tried to take him down, and even David Charles Hunt, Canning Town, an English organised crime boss linked to violence, fraud, prostitution, money laundering, murder. He heads a gang dubbed the Hunt Syndicate, and he's been described as being an extensive criminal empire that so far evaded significant penetration. That, like, there is nuts.
Sorry?
He's not been caught. He's been tried to put on trial before. The jury's backed down due to threats. But literally, it's worth... And there's very little of him on the internet. Very little. And so, he said the real good gangsters that are out there don't get caught. And that's... what's that? Anyway, so David Hunt, in bracket... is Wikipedia page. David Hunt, in bracket, gangster. And, and he literally lives in a mansion. And it's nuts, isn't it? You know, close friend and associate Reggie Cray, visiting in prison, all that stuff. But worth it. Anything you watched on TV, boys? Anything worth looking at?
I really haven't. No, I'm looking forward to the Wales England game. There you go.
Yeah, exactly. So it's literally it's a saving face
exercise
campaign exercise, isn't it? Really? Yeah. It's like, oh my god, we can't win anything. But sometimes it's like the market. You know, just ending on a circle there. You've got to hit the bottom sometimes to improve. You know, you've got to, and the market does that. It reevaluates, gets a certain level where you'll never learn more as an investor than doing a bear market. And I have learned so much in the last 18 months. It's phenomenal. And you become a better investor because with teams, when you hit rock bottom, you know, if you've got the ambition and you want to get better and you've got the support, you will get better because you analyze everything. Now, when you're winning all the time, you don't look so much at what you're doing wrong or right, you know, you just carry on doing it. And then sometimes, and it, all of a sudden, you take a big hit then and you're like, oh, but just saying, you have to reevaluate all the time. So sometimes, you know, Wales and England have to hit rock bottom in order to improve and really look at what they're doing wrong and right, you know? Does that make any sense at all?
Sort of, yeah. Right. Hang in there, guys.
Steve, come on, well, before we go, TV recommendation from Steve. You normally look at the TV. Steve, don't give us any sort of kids' nonsense like Cinderella and all that stuff.
There's this new programme on Prime, Clarks's Farm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's all right. You should give it a go.
What's it about?
Kelly Clarkson.
I'm not into farming. I'm not into farming, to be honest, Steve.
No. It's about tractors. Kelly Clarkson, has her own farm.
Yeah.
Right.
And, she just farms for a year and they just film her. It's great.
Oh, that's good. Okay. So that seems like it's copying Jeremy Clarkson's.
It's very similar. It's very similar. In fact, you've got to really go for the menus to find the Kelly Clarkson version. Yeah. But,
And when Steve's not moving money around, he's really going through the menus. Really going through the menus.
Exactly,
right, you want to come out, like, Steve? No, I'm going to go through the menus, actually. We're going to really find something there. Dig deep for the next couple of hours. I'm going to find something, you know. After I've moved my money around, that's it. So I'll do that. Move the money around, go through the menus.
Some people look for the 5-star programmes. I look for the ones with half a star.
Yeah. It's like they're looking for a good company on AIM sometimes. There is a rough diamond there somewhere. They've given it a 1-star, but I bet it's quite good. All right, okay. All right, boys, have a nice weekend. Speaking next week.
Nice one. Cheers, guys.
Bye.
The Share Pickers Weekend Podcast with Justin, Paddy, Peter and Steve. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research. Thank you.